Welcome to The Rink, a hockey podcast by hockey bloggers for hockey fans. I'm James Tapeleg Graylian. Along with me is my co-host, Tom Luongo from NHL Fanhouse. Martin Brodeur is going to be out for 3 to 4 months. The crazy start of the season is starting to level out, and the Northwest is starting to look a lot like the Southeast. We're going to talk to Earl Sleek from the Battle of California about the Ducks. Matt Sundin's agent says he's intrigued by Anaheim. We hope you're intrigued by The Rink. So really bad news this week for the New Jersey Devils. Martin Brodeur is going to be out for 3 to 4 months with a torn tendon in his elbow. This is,
wow.
Yeah, this is not something that New Jersey Devil fans really want to hear at this point, not only because of where it puts them as far as the, you know, as far as their team, but considering their attendance hasn't been great either, this is a huge blow all around.
I got to agree. This is the worst case scenario for Devils fans. I mean, we've had two of them on the show already, and both of them discuss the same things, which is, what do we do if Brodeur goes down with an injury? Well, we're about to find out. Now, I can say this. Kevin Weeks came in last night and was Herculean in his effort to keep the Sabres from running up the score into double digits. They outshot the Devils 20-3 in the first period last night. It was that bad. But the biggest thing, I think, is the hit to the Devils. They don't have any salary cap room.
No, they don't. And so you're going to have to ride out Kevin Weeks. And Weeks, you know, you said he was great last night, but he's shown flashes of brilliance before. There's a reason he's in the NHL, and there's a reason he's been around for as long as he has. He's been a number one goaltender. But what Kevin Weeks are we looking at here? And is this a Kevin Weeks that's going to be able to carry the New Jersey Devils for 3 to 4 months?
Yeah, we're talking about like 40 games. I think he's capable of it at times. I'm just, you know, he's going to have to turn into the season's Ty Conklin and just string off a series of games that we haven't, you know, we've never seen him play. You're right, he has been, you know, intermittently brilliant, and he's a very athletic goaltender. Last night against Buffalo, he was reading the play very well. He wasn't reacting. Like, he's always relied on his athleticism in the past. He looked more comfortable, and his reads were really good. So we'll see. But it's him and Scott Clemenson, or, you know, some convoluted evil loophole machinations in order to bring in someone like Dwayne Rollison or Nikolai Habibulin.
Nikolai Habibulin, that's way out of their price range, I would think. You know, there really isn't any better place for Weeks to be able to step into this kind of situation. I mean, the team, one of the criticisms founded or not against Marty Brodeur has always been that Brodeur has a certain style of team always playing in front of him, limiting shots, limiting chances.
Yeah, that's true. But what's interesting now is that they're hurt all through their lineup. They're hurt on the back end. Rolston was out last night. Holik was out last night. This is a big problem for them all through the lineup at this point. So Weeks is not stepping into even their first string team. He's stepping into a defense without Paul Martin.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be interesting.
Well, if you're a New Jersey Devils fan and, you know, looking at the attendance numbers right now, I believe that the announced attendance for that Sabres game, for the Sabres Devils game, was under 11,000. If your franchise is out for 3 to 4 months, are you going to want to buy a single game ticket?
I don't know. I mean, 10,000, I think it announced was like 10,347 or something. I saw it this morning at the box score.
And that's announced. That's not even paid for necessarily.
Yeah, that place was pretty empty last night.
Yeah, considering Marty Brodeur has been the franchise for so long, you see the franchise go down for 3 to 4 months, and if anything, not only is it going to expose your goaltender for what they really are, it's going to expose the team in front of him for what they really are.
Yeah,
this is going to be a testament to whether, you know, if the Devils can step it up through this, it's going to be very impressive.
Yeah, I just expect to see a whole lot of 1-4 trapping and a whole lot of five-man zone and defense. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're just trying to keep the middle of the ice clear, let Weeks see what he needs to see, and hope that they're physical enough to keep the opposing team's forwards at the outside. If they're able to do that, they can probably squeak through with enough 2-1 wins to keep them in the hunt until Brodeur comes back or somewhere around the trade deadline or so, and they'll have a little bit of cap room because they're only sitting at like $600,000 underneath the cap right now. So they don't really even have a whole lot of room to go and get anybody else. I mean, they would free up a little bit of space by putting Clemens back down to the minors, and that would get them maybe $1 million in cap space. But I don't know. This is one of those horrible situations that you hate to see when a team is that close to the cap, and they have a non-season-ending injury to a major player. How well they're going to, be able to ride that out. This is what the cap does to you.
Yeah, that's true. And, looking at the Islanders, of course, just down the street, Rick DiPietro is going through his carousel of injuries again at more knee problems. If there's any chance for them to get back into it, it's got to be with DiPietro coming back strong.
So, we have one team that's got their franchise goaltender down, Brodeur. Now we have the New York Islanders in the same place where we have DiPietro just had the surgery on that knee that was, we're not sure if it's the same knee as the one he had surgery on over the summer or what, but you're talking about a team that now, this is between last night and Saturday night, blew two three-goal third-period leads, which is pretty impressive.
It's astounding.
Actually. Yeah, it really is.
And we're not talking about the same type of team as the Devils, obviously, but
no.
We're still talking about a team that's built around the goaltender and with two potentially different outcomes, but two potentially very similar outcomes. The Islanders are pretty much the whipping boy of the league right now, and yep. Probably for good reason.
They have every right. I mean, they've already had a couple of closed door sessions. I think Bill Guerin, I heard on the Hot Stove the other night, had a throwing match meeting with Scott Gordon. They've already had a couple of airing out sessions. They've had, it's already a mess and going south quickly. And now, the tag team of Wayne Dubowitz and Joey McDonald aren't getting it done out on the island. I can expect them to blow a 3-goal lead to Montreal. Okay. Blowing a 3-goal lead to Columbus. Mm-hmm. Only to have Chris Campoli score twice on the same shift in the shootout in overtime because they missed the first shot that went in. I love that about the NHL. I read that on Puck Daddy this afternoon. It was pretty damn funny. And to get their third win of the season, but they had to get that win in overtime and give a pity point to Columbus. That's just sad.
Well, and Columbus isn't looking very good at all. It's one of those teams. Columbus is one of those teams that I look at and I think, well, all the components seem to be there. Why isn't anything gelling? What's wrong with this team? And it just seems like every time they've been playing a game, somebody's exposing a new weakness.
Yeah, I mean, on paper, it looks like this is a good team there, but at the same time, there's all a lot of mercenary things. I mean, I look at a guy like Pekka, and I see nothing but a mercenary at this point in his career, and I don't see a real leader. I don't see the same guy who was in Buffalo or even the guy who was out on Long Island. I see a mercenary who's playing out the end of his career, and I may be wrong about that. And I think there's just enough of those guys in that room, and the fact that the youngsters really haven't stepped up and mm-hmm. grabbed the bull by the horns yet. Maybe they're just not ready. Maybe they aren't. And Ken Hitchcock hasn't. Just hasn't gotten them the gel yet.
I think I can forgive some of the mercenary style or the mercenary look of some of the players out there when you see people like Jeff Finger getting big contracts that they don't deserve necessarily. Well, not that Jeff Finger's going to say, hey, you want to hand me that kind of contract, I'm going to turn it down. But
right.
When they see these kinds of contracts getting handed out, you're going to go where the money is, and that's more so these days with the salary cap. When there's an opening and that opening comes in a roster slot and a dollar figure, these guys, I think these guys are going to take it. I think it just reinforces the team NHL mentality rather than playing for the Blue Jackets. You play for Team NHL and you do what you can to stay there.
Well, exactly, and that's you have to ask yourself then, is that the path to success in the league? And, you know, is that why franchises like Columbus are potentially hanging around the 500 mark for the first 4 or 5 months of the season and then eventually fall apart? Florida, Atlanta, you know.
And on and on. I think that we're looking at the secret of some of the success of Detroit. You know, you've got a team that people want to play for enough that they take the salary cuts. You know, if Chris Chelios is, you know, he's winding down, obviously. The guy's older than dirt. But if he wanted to, he could accept a higher salary somewhere else, even if by a couple more $100,000 or even
sure.
maybe $1 million by, you know, per year. For a couple of years, but he wants to play in Detroit. You know, then again, I look at Colorado Avalanche right now. You've got Joe Sakic, who keeps coming back as on his 1 year contracts, and boy, they're not looking like the model. That's for sure.
I guess not. Yeah. Well, they're in that perennially tough Northwest that I'm not sure is really all that tough right now. If it's just not the picture of like creeping mediocrity.
A couple years ago, and especially even last year with the old schedule where it was the 8 games against your divisional rival, you know, the points had to go somewhere. And right. when you have that tight of a division, as it has been in the past several years, that's a great excuse. And I think that's been kind of the excuse for the Northwest, that whenever somebody would say, this is a division that looks really mediocre, No. We're just, you know, they're losing points to each other and they're gaining points from each other, and that's why it's so tight. Well, right now, the Northwest is looking a lot like the Southeast, and it's not pretty.
Well, that's a really good point. I hadn't really thought about it that way. Now that we're opening the schedule up a little bit, you're starting to expose the real weaknesses of some of these teams.
I think we are, and we're going to expose it to the other conference too, and that's going to be kind of an interesting way of how, you know, how that plays out. It seems like every couple of years, whenever they change the schedule and the format, that we're kind of looking at a new point structure.
No, that's a good point. I hadn't really considered that at all. I'll have to add that into my repertoire of, you know, things to go to. I mean, honestly, it's like my Rolodex of points to think about when I'm looking at the schedule over a year-to-year basis. I always do these things. I hadn't thought about that at all.
Really. Well, when you're an apologist for the division, or you have to feel like an apologist for your team right now, sometimes you have to kind of go to the well. Hey, what looks good this week? But yeah, that's something I've always been thinking about, and I've heard it batted around. You know, when people look at these teams, you know, we've got Vancouver is pretty mediocre right now. Colorado is pretty much looking like everybody thought they were going to look like, which I was hoping that they wouldn't. Edmonton, right. Everybody thought was going to be the people to beat, and right now they're not awful, but they're not the people to beat. And Minnesota are the ones who are winning all the games by not letting any goals get by them.
It's
kind of looking at it and thinking, okay, now how do I make myself feel better right now in a way? But but there's some truth to it too.
I'm a fan I follow the Northeast pretty closely. And you could say the same thing about the Northeast for a long time as well. But it became pretty obvious the last couple of years that there were, you know, two teams that were the class of the division, and then everybody else was very mediocre. And it's been that way for a long time, that there's two teams at the top of the division. The teams that were there would rotate in and out. 1 year it'd be Montreal, then it'd be, you know, Buffalo and Montreal. This year, obviously, the class of the division. And then the past, it may have been Toronto and Ottawa, with Montreal on the way out, looking out, you know, and then moving it around. Mm-hmm. But, but it was always a log jam, really, in the top three spots of the division. And we always, you know, we always consoled ourselves the same way, saying, well, the Northeast is a grudge match, man. You just don't understand. And, well, not really. the point about Edmonton is that, to think about, you know, if anybody who was picking Edmonton early in the season had to either have Canadian blinders on or whatnot, because really they're still a very young team. And so you have to expect a lot of inconsistency, and we're seeing that with guys like Sam Gagner struggling a little bit. And I saw a quote from him saying, well, you know, at least I only have two less goals than Ovechkin. and a couple other things. And, you know, they're all going to – this is what you have when you have younger teams. And you're not going to build that dynasty or even that winning – team overnight. It's going to take Edmonton, I would think, the better part of the season to find their identity and then find out whether or not they're really good enough.
Well, it's true. And, you know, looking at Edmonton's scores right now, or stats right now, with only 11 games played, I mean, they're essentially one above 500. They're 6-4-1, but they've won six games. They've lost four by less goals for than against. They have 26 goals for and 31 against. So that doesn't sound like a hugely consistent team to me right now.
No, they're actually, I'm looking over right now, they in Boston, no, they are the only team in the league that has a winning record and has scored fewer goals than they've given up. Mm-hmm. And it's that horrendous PK of theirs. It's just, oh my God, 73%. But actually, I look around the league and all the PK numbers are really really bad.
Well, you have again, those percentages have to go somewhere. When you have Minnesota clipping at 20.8% right now, that's, you know, that they got to score those goals somewhere,
right?
You know, that's everything that should all work out as a balance sheet eventually. Well, so,
or Detroit clipping at 33%, 1-3 on power play, unbelievable.
That's not right. Those are
Montreal. Those are Montreal numbers. I didn't know Richard was the head. gotten 60 years younger and was playing on the power play in Detroit.
Oh my God! I hate to say that. It pains me to say it. We don't need smaller goalie pads. We just need more Detroit power plays. Is that what we need?
I think so.
Pains me to say that.
Yeah. Well, you know, Ottawa's in last place. They've got a 25% power play. And what are you going to do? that's really funny. The Philadelphia is the same thing. They're looking at a 26% power play, and they're 4-4-3. And, you know, they're playing with an AHL defense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true. So, look at the we're talking about the schedule and how the schedule's shifting out these points. And it seemed like a bit of a scheduling debacle with San Jose and Detroit playing recently, with Detroit having to play back-to-back games and being on a four-game road swing. Is this just the league pushing too many games down our throats? Is this just what an 82 schedule or 82 game schedule kind of looks like? Is this what it's going to do to the league?
I haven't been a fan of the 82 game schedule for a long time for a couple of reasons. And yeah, I just thought it was a real shame. I brought it up to you off microphone about that San Jose Detroit game that, you know, we get together to sit down and watch that game. And we did a live blog over at Fan House, and it was really cool. And thanks to everybody who showed up. And it was a real shame at the end of the night to know that Detroit had no chance of winning that game, because there they were, third game in four nights. They had played a brutal game the night before in Anaheim, lost in overtime 5-4, and then had to come in the next night and play against a rested Sharks team. And, you know, this is your marquee matchup in the Western Conference for the entire week. Let's be honest. This is San Jose and Detroit, the two best teams in the conference. Wouldn't you want to see these guys go at it in such a way that, you know, it's at least a reasonably level rink of ice? It would be really nice to see. And I just think a 70-game schedule or something smaller than that would eliminate a lot of those things,
yeah,
a lot of these opportunities.
I don't know. I mean, 70 seems like it's so hard for me to say which one do we want to go with. Do we want to cut 12 games out of the season? I mean, starting with like cutting six out would be nice. And maybe now that we're opening up the schedule a little bit more between conferences, perhaps there's going to be a little bit more room for the schedule maker to say, okay, now you can go over to the other conference, play a few games over there without having to do back-to-backs in your own conference.
Right.
Hopefully that'd be nice. But part of the problem, of course, in America is that we're dealing with multi-team arenas. You know, the LA Kings play, you know, only so many times, of course, at home. And then also they have to change over for basketball. The same thing happens in Colorado. You've got the Avalanche, you've got the Nuggets, you've got indoor lacrosse. You know, all these things kind of pile on to the schedule, and unfortunately the schedule maker has to dance around those things too, and it doesn't help. You go up to Edmonton and, you know, Rexall Place, what have you got? You've got the Oilers, and that's about it. Perhaps a concert here or there or whatnot, but it's kind of the benefit to Canadian teams that they get those that they don't have to do the changeovers and schedule around another league that's doing, what, 80 games? So
right. They're doing the same number of games that we're doing. The NBA plays 82 games as well. Yeah, I can't standing here called Rexall Place. To me, it's still the Northlands Coliseum. it just is, man.
Hey, there are some people who can't stand to hear them called the Carolina Hurricanes. They're still the Hartford Whalers. So
yeah, and those guys all work at ESPN. So yeah, I mean, it would just it's one of those fantasy things. I like to bring it. I don't know. I just like to bring it up. You know, every once in a while, just to remind people that, you know, there's a lot of players I know that would prefer it. I remember JR spoke out about it 3 or 4 years ago. The wear and tear on the players is the rough part. The lack of practice time in the middle of the season is hard. So a team that gets on a downward funk can't break out of it by doing any. You know, they're constantly on the grind of having to play games and try and play their way out of it while losing points in the standings. Mm-hmm. There's any number of other little things that would be improved. You know, little injuries would have more times to heal. There'd probably be overall better power plays. And then also to harken back to what we talked about last week, which is that each game would be more of an event. You take 6 or 12 games out of the schedule, and now every game is that much more important. And so now we, as the audience, care that much more about the individual games. You'd probably be able to charge close to the same amount of money for the course of your season tickets, mm-hmm. because you'd be getting a higher quality product over 70 games on average than you would over an 82-game schedule, and therefore you'd be willing to pay more money per game. So,
and your percentages go up in attendance, which also, of course, makes a difference when you're having to leverage that against the same amount of people that you're hiring for every game. Essentially, it costs exactly the same to put on each game. You still have to hire the same people, same concessions, same everything, but an 80% filled house, a 90% filled house, and a 100% filled house all obviously balance out different. So, it's kind of one of those things where you look at it at first and you think, wow, if you were to cut 12 games out of everybody's pocket, it's essentially six per team home games, that'd really take a dent. But then again, maybe it wouldn't. It's interesting economics to look at.
I would think so, but I doubt it's ever going to come to pass. So, you know, it's nice to dream.
Yeah, and maybe we could fit. We could be able to fit every single game then onto Versus. Or
ooh. Speaking of which, actually, there was a really good follow up at Puck Daddy this morning, or was it yesterday, on the changes coming that Steve was talking about last week, on the changes coming to Versus.com. They're wanting to leverage bloggers and try and integrate themselves more into the general fan community and stuff. And there's just more of a fleshing out of the things that Steve was talking about last week on the interview and on that blog post that he had. So people might want to go check that out as well.
Well, we'll wait and see and if they decide to start using podcasts or not before we throw ourselves at their mercy and see what they say.
Yeah, we're not going there just yet.
Not yet. Well, thanks, Tom. So Marty Brodeur's out. Kevin Weeks is in. But we're living in a salary cap world. How exactly does that affect the Devils? Tom Luongo is going to tell us how.
With Marty Brodeur expected to be out for 3 to 4 months with a torn bicep, I felt it might be time to review some aspects of the salary cap to help illuminate just what the Devils' options are and how hosed they may be if Kevin Weeks isn't up to the task of filling in. The Devils stand at a current cap figure of $56.1 million. The cap itself is managed and calculated on a daily basis. For this season, the $56.7 million cap is spread over 186 days, meaning that teams may spend just under $305,000 per day on player salaries. Each day of the season passes, and another $305,000 of salary is available to be used. So, on day one of the regular season, the cap stood at $305,000. On day two, it stood at $610,000. On day three, $915,000, and so on. The Devils today have $576,000 in cap space, which means that each day they are spending under the limit by approximately $3,100. This money is effectively banked for future use. As the season winds on, this banked money becomes more valuable as it could be spent over a shorter period of time and burned at a higher rate, i.e., on a higher annual salary. So, for example, if the Devils banked $3,100 per day for 120 days, they would have $372,000 to spend over the final 66 days of the season, which would allow them to take on a player who's making $1.05 million per year. So, the Devils' situation with Brodeur is precisely why, as a fan, you should never cheer your GM to spending right to the cap. It gives you no wiggle room if a player's injury is not season-ending, and for these reasons. Because the Devils have two options right now. They can put Marty Brodeur on long-term injured reserve, which will allow them to exceed the salary cap to replace him for the time that he's injured. And now names like Nikolai Habibulin and Dwayne Rolison come to mind immediately. But at that point, the Devils stop banking money for future acquisitions. They have a goalie, though, they can use to fill in for Brodeur while he's out, who they would then presumably have to waive once Brodeur was ready to return. The other option is to ride out the injury with Kevin Weeks and Scott Clemenson. Brodeur would not be on long-term IR. The Devils would still be banking money for the trade deadline to add depth, but they may be out of the playoff picture by then if Weeks can't handle the load. So Lou Lamoriello could try and hold Brodeur on long-term IR until the playoffs, where there is no cap, but that would undoubtedly be challenged at some point by either the NHL or one of the teams in the East, or at the very least, we hope so. The CBA states explicitly that the player is to be taken off long-term IR once he is medically cleared to play, at which point the Devils must get under the cap as they will have no cap space left and must immediately become compliant, shedding any excess salary. Interestingly, when the Sabres were cap-strapped in 07 over Tim Connolly's concussion, the NHL ruled he would be ineligible to play for the playoffs unless he played at least one game of the regular season. The CBA has no explicit rules about this. It's at the discretion of the commissioner. So if Evil Lou does indeed trade for a goalie, it will be interesting to see what his response to the situation is when Brodeur is ready to play, and whether the commissioner will hold him and the Devils to the same standard he placed in front of other teams in the past. I have my doubts. Ta.
Another team that's feeling the cap crunch right now is the Anaheim Ducks, and Tom and I were able to talk to Earl Sleek from the Battle of California about the Ducks and about a certain suitor. Well, maybe not. Matt Sundin's agent, of course, today says that the great undecider is intrigued by the Ducks. What do you think? Is he really intrigued by the Ducks, or is he intrigued by not freezing his ass off in Toronto anymore?
Well, there's a couple things Anaheim does offer. One, we don't care if anyone unretires in the middle of the year. We've seen that plenty before. Anonymity, I mean, Anaheim offers that in spades. I'll never have to deal with the Toronto media again. But we don't have any money to spend. We can't even afford to keep Bobby Ryan up on the big club, so he's really got to play for peanuts. And if he wants to do that, yeah, sure.
Well, when you have, Vancouver's out there, what was reportedly out there offering 2 years at $10 million a year, which if you believe those numbers, do you think Matt Sundin really wants to play for peanuts?
No, I think this is all ridiculous. I mean, I would give this an E0, but, you know, somebody said it. And
an Earl Zero.
Yeah. Earl Zero. If it happens, I mean, we'll question if Matt Sundin's got it all together, but we'll take it.
Well, if Matt Sundin's been skating in, hasn't he been skating in L.A. or in the L.A. area? Is that why he's intrigued, or is this just? I mean, I think it's just agent speak myself.
Yeah, I mean, I think agent would like it to be known that as many teams are talking to Sundin as possible. So, I mean, throw Anaheim's name in there. I mean, it probably won't happen, but.
Hey, you have 900,000 right now in cap space? That's pretty tight.
I can't even do the math anymore. We're very tight. I don't even know where we signed Brett Hedekin from. I thought we were tight at the cap at that point. So they're finding money, but they're scraping by. And at some point this season, there'll be enough room to get Bobby Ryan up to the big club. But at this point, that's really our trade deadline acquisition in my mind.
Well, and also you've got you guys sent Ken Klee down, which, you know, should keep you guys out of the penalty box a little bit more.
Klee got brought back up and claimed by Phoenix, so we're paying half his salary.
Half his salary? Oh, that's painful.
$600,000 or something.
Well, that's your that's the cap space that you have right now. Because actually, I'm looking at NHL numbers. It comes up 0.39 million, so $390,000 in actual cap space right now.
Yeah, so I mean, we can be talking to anybody right now. We can't sign Jeff Friesen at this point. So,
Brendan Shanahan signs for $100,000. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, if people want to sign for league minimum, that's really what we're offering.
And yeah, that's about all you've. Yeah, that's you'd have to cut somebody to get the league minimum.
Right. And we can cut somebody for Sundin, but.
Well, you're not cutting the stash because, you know, not with that beautiful goal he scored the other night. There's just no way.
The staff is hurt right now, but I'll tell you, the fourth line has been the unsung heroes of this team this year, and I have no idea where it came from. But Brad May, he's out too right now, but Peros, Ryan Carter, and I don't know, all these guys are like plus five. None of them been on the ice for a goal against. Sutherby's another one too. And right. For a while, I mean, we were terrible the first like six games, but they were scoring almost every game. It was ridiculous. Up was down and down was up.
Well, Peros had scored what, two goals before Corey Perry had scored a goal, or before Getzlaff?
I think Brian Sutherby has three, which is ridiculous because he played probably 50 games for us last year and didn't score any.
He's got he's running 3-3. He's a plus seven.
Plus seven.
And he's playing 7 minutes a night.
Yeah, I mean, the guy can't even get on our penalty kill.
So Brendan Morrison is minus seven.
And yeah, Morrison, he's had a rough go of it. I mean, while everyone else woke up around him, Morrison's still dragging it down. But I don't mind it too much. I mean, the team's winning now, and Morrison certainly got a better game to him. It's just a matter of when it's going to show up.
Well, the team is winning right now, and they started out with four straight losses. They looked like they had just come back from Europe last year. So now all of a sudden they're winning again. Was everybody freaking out about the Ducks a little bit too early?
I mean, it's kind of a strange win streak. I mean, it's 6-0-1 in the last seven. Getzlaff, Perry, and Solani have been scoring like crazy. So it's been making up for a lot of mistakes. Mm-hmm. But we'll take the points right now.
Yeah. Well, Timo Solani's looking...
Unfortunately, the Pacific's blowing up around us, so...
The Pacific is a really interesting division right now. Marty Turco is not looking like Marty Turco. Phoenix is looking like Phoenix, like they normally do. So same with L.A. And the Sharks are just running away with it. How's it feel to kind of have those kinds of neighbors right now?
I mean, right now it's actually kind of calming because we're kind of stuck in the middle of it right now, not too far away from San Jose, not too far away from the rest of the pack, but I don't feel any stress to keep up with it right now. I mean, there's no one right neck and neck with us.
Right. If you look at it, you're solidly in a playoff position at this point. 15 points is, you know, good enough to be leading the Northwest, or, you know, put you in the same position out in the Central. There's only, you know, really there's only three teams ahead of you. So,
and playoff seedings is something I've always thought was a little overrated. I mean, the Cup year, they were second seed, and it did help. But, you know, they've had great runs from seventh seed and sixth seed where, you know, you got to play well once you're there. I mean, last year they fought really hard to get the fourth seed over Dallas and then lost the first two games, and that series was almost over.
Right.
So, you know. Sometimes it's not worth it.
Lindy Ruff has always said he'd rather open a playoff series on the road anyway. In many ways, well, one, because for years that's all he ever did, and two, because it does give you different focus. You're focused on doing nothing but playing the game and not focused on getting people tickets and, you know, having to put on a show for the hometown crowd and all this other stuff.
Selfishly, as a fan, I love it when we start on the road, too, because then I have, like, a week to get plans together instead of, like, 2 days of who's ready for game one, you know, we'll meet here.
Right.
Starting the road gives you a little time.
Right.
Well, cool. Earl, thank you so much for doing this with us, and we're absolutely going to come and talk to you again about the Ducks probably halfway through the season and find out how they're doing.
Yeah, catch me on a losing streak. I'm pretty amusing then, too.
You were pretty amusing on a winning streak. Cool.
All right, well, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate it, man. It was good to talk to you finally.
Well, that does it this week for The Rink. Our thanks to Earl Sleek from Battle of California. You can find the Battle of California at battleofcalifornia.blogspot.com. And you can also find his work at nhl.fanhouse.com, where you can also find Tom Luongo's work. My blog is at jerseysandhockeylove.com, and The Rink is located at www.rinkpodcast.com. You can also email us at rink@rinkpodcast.com, or if you want to, you can call us at 845-704-RINK. That's 845-704-7465. Thanks a lot for listening this week to The Rink.